This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani. It's now 9:36 a.m. and time for Pressing Matters. This is the show that takes you beyond the headlines of the day. And of course, dominating the headlines of the day is the results of the twin by-elections over the weekend. Joining us on the show today to delve deeper into those results is P. Gunasegaram, former Kini Biz editor. He's now an independent consultant, trainer and writer. Welcome, Guna, to the show.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay, so just a quick roundup of what happened. Barisan Nasional saw a decisive victory in the twin by-elections. They saw an increase in popular vote share in both seats, both Kuala Kangsar and Sungai Besar. In fact, taking a look at the Sungai Besar majority, they won an over 9,000 vote majority there. If you compare that to what they won in the 2013 general elections, that's 23 times increase in terms of vote majority. How should we read the Barisan Nasional win in both by-elections, Guna?
Yeah, I think of course, the major thing is that the opposition vote in this case was split between Amanah and PAS. So Amanah is a relatively is a newcomer to the scene. PAS has been a party which is very, very old. The presence has been there for a very long time. So if you were to total up the opposition ward, if you were to take say Sungai Besar, for instance, if you total up Amanah and PAS, that is 14,511 versus BN 16,800. So that's a difference of about 2,300. It's clear that the split in the opposition vote is partly the reason for making BN look so good in this case. Isn't it?
Okay.
So this 2,300 versus the previous majority of 399.
Yeah, I think it's important to note the number of votes cast for Barisan Nasional. Noria Kasno, the deceased Sungai Besar MP, she got 51%.
The wife of the deceased.
Noria Kasno is the deceased.
Tan
Sri Noria Kasno, the one who passed away, mm-hmm. Right? She got 51%. Of votes in 2013. Budiman, 2 days ago, got 53% of the votes. So that means the rise or the jump for votes for BN actually jumped just 2%. And I think this is important to note. Yes, while the numbers are huge, Guna, you were mentioning, yeah, if you total up all the Amanah and PAS numbers, it comes to about 2,000 majority, right, if you compare against Barisan Nasional.
Basically, it's a turn of 1%. A turn of 1% causes a 2% difference.
I see, yeah. There you go. Mm. So a turn of 1%, because minus 1% plus 1% if you draw a timeline. Mm. Yes. But this is the whole point. There is still, even if you slice and dice the numbers, there's still an overwhelming majority of support for BN.
But the reality is that the opposition is split. You have an Amanah and you have a PAS. You know? So what happens under this kind of a scenario? So I think even if you look at that, I think if you were to look at some of the reasons for the emphatic BN victory, the Chinese vote seems to have swung back to the Barisan. I think some estimates, it's still very preliminary. You don't really know what the numbers are. For instance, nearly 50% of the Chinese vote in Sungai Besar, according to some estimates, would have gone to Barisan. That's a fairly big swing, because the 2013 estimate was around 75%. So I think some analysts, including me, had expected, say, as much as 80% of the Chinese vote to go to Amanah, but this did not happen. So 80% to go to Amanah because, because of the proposal on the table to introduce Hudud,
But that wasn't Amanah's bill, right? That was
PAS's bill.
So I can understand, I completely agree with you that perhaps the Chinese voters were the deciding factor in this by-elections. But, and I understand perhaps PAS's, they were deterred by PAS's private members bill, that lost a lot of the support from the Chinese community. But, why didn't Amanah get that support? We thought that, okay, fine, it might be channeled towards Amanah rather than Barisan Nasional.
Well, Amanah is a new entity for one, is it? And I think, and despite all of DAP's efforts to channel more votes into Amanah, I think there was a problem, because people didn't know what Amana was, what it stood for, and Amana stance on the so-called Hudud Bill was not clear as well. And many people did not know what was the Amana logo, even, for instance. You know? So these are some of the factors which would have been working against Amana. And then you have other things about, you know, two fishermen were freed in Indonesia at exactly the right time, 2 to 3 days, you know, before the final casting of the votes, you know. And then you had promises, incentives, you know, which were announced by BN, you know, okay, your fishing licenses, remember, you know, we are responsible for them. And
it's like a veiled threat,
yeah,
right?
So, yeah. So we can, you know, we will get more legal immigrants to come and work on your boat. So those kind of things too would have played a part in the whole thing. And PKR's sort of like perhaps lack of support for Amana, not seeming lack of support. Azmin Ali's relative lack of absence in Sungai Besar to help the candidate.
He went down, right? Yeah. He went down on the ground, but I think it was fairly late in the game. And yes, I think there wasn't an outright show support. I think what voters were looking for in this by-elections was some kind of sign of unity, you know, like some show of unity, some kind of, hey, we're all good friends and we're working together.
So it became a little bit awkward for everyone when Azmin actually did come down for the campaign. Both past candidate and Amana candidate was there.
Yeah, that was a buka puasa.
It was a buka puasa thing, and it was more of a solidarity thing, you know, we're all friends.
I can see where that would confuse voters because
it confuses me. I mean, let alone the voters, right?
It's called mixed signals, Ibrahim.
Mixed signals.
Yes, I mean, and then you know the perceived split between Azmin Ali and Rafizi, for instance, you know, both from the same camp. While Rafizi was doing a lot of campaigning, Azmin Ali did not seem to be. So I think there is also voter disenchantment with the opposition, generally speaking. You know, okay. Previously, you had an opposition with past insight, and then now it's not there anymore, and so on.
Yeah, so again, you know, it's important to. So we've been talking about Sungai Besar. There's also the Kuala Kangsar aspect, right?
Do you think the Sungai Besar was more interesting, or the Kuala Kangsar was
actually both?
So you because found both equally interesting.
I found both equally quite interesting because the second place was different in both the areas, and I think that's important.
Okay,
to
so very quickly, In Kuala Kangsar, PAS came in second ahead of Amana by 801 votes. Sungai Besar, Amana ahead of PAS by 707 votes.
Yeah.
So the fact that the second and third place was a really close horse race, does that even matter?
It matters a lot because right now Amana can say that they have a lot of relevance in Selangor. So going into the general election, does it mean that Amana will now have the moral stand ground to say I want more seats?
I remember speaking to an analyst and he said, you know, what does it matter the second and third place? All that matters is the first place. But Guna, do you agree with that?
Well, I suppose one has to look at whether Amana will become a relevant party in future. No, but I think part of the difference is explained by a higher percentage of Chinese voters in Sungai Besar compared to Kuala Kangsar. Kuala Kangsar is 24% Chinese, and then in Sungai Besar it's 31% Chinese. So, which means then, considering that a fair amount of Chinese support will go to Amana, then it's not so much a surprise that, in Sungai Besar, Amana became number two.
All right. So again, let's look at how much Kuala Kangsar BN got the vote. Back in 2013, the deceased Wan Khairul Anwar, he got 52% of all the votes cast for him.
Mm-hmm.
In this election, Datin Mastura, his wife, the surviving widow of Wan Khairul Anwar, she got 54%. So in 2013, 52% of votes went to BN. Now 54% of votes went to BN. So yes, you know, I have to agree that there are a lot of problems in the opposition. But then when has the opposition not have any problems? The differential factor here, the delta here, is there was support for BN in 2004. And then BN just lost all the support in 2008, 2013. Now BN got the support again in 2016. And that is the delta here. That is where it's important to note.
On the front pages of most of the news dailies today, comments from Prime Minister Najib about Tun Dr. Mahathir saying, in fact, that his campaigning was had done them a favour, had done Barisan Nasional a favour, in fact. So let's talk a little bit about the Dr. Mahathir factor. In fact, this morning, Cheryl Koh from the news team spoke to Ibrahim Sufian of Merdeka Centre on Current Affairs, and she asked him about Dr. Mahathir's campaigning for the opposition and whether, in fact, Mahathir has lost his influence.
Well, I think, you know, the PM's position is partly true, you know, and also I think people have made up the potential impact of Dr. Mahathir far greater than what it really can. I mean, Dr. Mahathir as a person is an institution in the country. He's deeply respected by many segments of society for what he has achieved as Prime Minister. So one cannot take that away from him. However, I think the political inclinations of the Malaysian public are pretty deep set in the sense that most people are wedded to their parties, even though they don't like the leaders. So we can see that in the vote shares for PAS, for UMNO, you know, regardless of the fact that the leaders of the party are mired in all kinds of controversy and coming up with policies that are not making members happy, their supporters continue to support their party. So the brand loyalty to these political parties is pretty strong. So the impact of Dr. Mahathir is, in a sense, he's an enabler for threshold votes, in a sense that he could potentially move 3-5%, but there is a precondition, and the precondition is that he needs to have the opposition united. The opposition in itself needs to present a credible alternative, whether in leadership or means of running a government. And I think those two ingredients were not there. And therefore, the added impact of Dr. Mahathir cannot be seen in these two by-elections.
That was Ibrahim Sufian from the Merdeka Centre. In fact, if you want to listen to the entire interview, you can download that podcast from today's Current Affairs show. Just find that on our website. But Guna, I mean, what do you think about what Ben had to say in terms of being very specific about, you know, the impact of Mahathir on polling? I mean, 3-5% is what he reckoned Mahathir's influence was.
Okay, I think I would largely agree with Ibrahim Sufian here. You know, Mahathir is a very interesting person to watch. He gets all his messages and things like that very accurately, and he's a very, even at 91 years of age, he's a very engaging speaker who actually can talk to the crowd on his own terms. But, I mean, in this case here, I think, like Ibrahim Sufian was saying, people are wedded to their political parties. So in UMNO's history, anyone who has left and gone against UMNO has not succeeded. And this dates back to the days of, when he left to found the Malayan Union way back in the late 40s. So, it would be wrong to say that he's got no influence, but he will have some amount of influence at the margin, and that will make a difference only if the opposition was united.
Yeah,
you know?
So yeah. That point stuck with me. I mean, the precondition that the opposition would, you know, kind of get their act together, I'm paraphrasing Ibrahim Sufian here, but, you know, the precondition that the opposition would remain united. And because that didn't happen, I guess there was no impetus for voters to vote in that direction.
3-4%, remember, is enough to win the election if the opposition is united.
Okay, you know? So I think, you know, the opposition is fully aware of this, even without listening to this show. However, I'm pretty sure they would listen to this show anyhow. But having said that, what's the next measures that the opposition is going to take? Does it mean the amalgamation of some of these political parties?
Yeah. I think if you look at Amana, it's very clear that they have not got the kind of support from the Malays that they need to get to be a viable party.
Yeah, so does it mean that they have to merge with DAP? I mean, this is the question that we have to ask, right?
If they merge with DAP, they're going to get even less Malay support.
Yeah, you know? Because they're not getting the Malay support now. So what do they do? Do they stand alone as Amana has what they are now, or more realistically speaking, they have to merge with PKR in order for them to build a stronger coalition. Because essentially, let's face it, PKR and DAP both have to renegotiate their terms of contract with PAS. They can't go ahead into the next polls without PAS. And how do they do that without dealing with the Amanah problem outright?
Yeah, in this case here, I mean, when you look at the numbers, it looks like Amanah clearly has got less than 20% Malay support.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a very, very low figure for a party which claims to be Malay. You know?
Or Islamic party.
Yeah, right? Or Islamic.
Yeah.
So I think, which goes to show that PAS is still a very strong party in terms of garnering the Malay support for the opposition coalition. And in the foregone conclusion to my mind is that the opposition needs PAS.
Yeah.
So they need to do what they can to, if they want to be a credible opposition in the next GE, which might be called at any time, they need to work with PAS rather than against them. You know, hudud bil or no hudud bil. You know?
Because, absolutely. I mean,
PAS,
no, absolutely.
PAS is a very
right.
long established party. You know, I mean,
yeah, they are as old as AMNO. One can argue.
Almost
yeah.
as old as AMNO.
Yeah, right. and here you are. You have Amanah sticking out like a sore thumb, trying to understand how are they going to deal with this problem. You can't negotiate with PAS if Amanah is around.
Okay, so essentially, kind of the takeaway from the by-election results is not so much about Barisan Nasional's decisive win, but rather the fact that PAS holds a lot of leverage.
Yeah. You know, we saw this morning, Melissa, on the dailies, is this a referendum for Najib's administration? I think a few newspapers actually argued that it is, and therefore the referendum is now in the positive for Najib's administration.
Oh, but you mean as in a sentiment gauge?
A sentiment gauge. Mm-hmm. But I think this is also a wake-up call for the opposition to understand that they cannot imagine to govern the nation if they can't get their house in order.
You know, on that note, right, given the positive sentiment that's been moving towards BN and Najib, some analysts are predicting that Najib might even call for a general election as early as next year instead of the 2018. So Cheryl Koh asked this of Ibrahim Sufian from Merdeka Centre this morning.
There is a slim possibility like something like that would happen. I mean, if you were to examine how Prime Minister Najib has timed his moves, he comes across as a very cautious, a very careful man. He actually makes sure that all the preparations are in place in order to ensure that there is highest possibility of victory. So be that the opposition is in disarray and that some elements of the crowd, particularly ethnic Chinese, may be swinging back, I think there might be other factors such as the strength of the economy, the government's ability to deliver some of the services that he has promised, as well as the party's ability to select more winnable candidates. All of those need to be in place in time for a general election. So I think whilst there is some possibility, my bet is still elections are likely to take place in 2018.
I don't know. I'm inclined to agree with... I think I respectfully disagree with Ibrahim Sufian here in terms of, I think because sentiment is riding high, and a positive sentiment is riding high, perhaps this would be a good call for Barisan Nasional to call elections early.
But by-elections are always quite different from general elections, and the BN tends to do very well in by-elections. So I think you're not going to get the same kind of results if you go into general elections, especially if PAS is in the coalition. You know? Right. So that could be a pretty iffy thing for Barisan. And at the same time, you have a lot of development still taking place on the 1MDB, at the 1MDB level, many things being uncovered, new and other questionable things coming up. So, well, Najib can stay in power for 2 years, is he? Why would he want to risk that, say, by going to elections earlier? So that's one way of looking at it. You know?
Okay, well, the other thing that was dominating headlines this morning was the Sun newspaper. They quoted Najib, Selangor next.
Yep.
You know, so now they're gunning for Selangor because they say that the win in Sungai Besar was actually the first step in retaking the state.
So I was in Sungai Besar when Tan Sri Noh Omar actually said this statement. He said that he was mentioning this to his group of people in UMNO, and saying that if we were to chart our next move, I'm trying to translate very loosely from Bahasa Melayu here, the next step will be to capture Selangor. And when that happens, please remember that it was at Sungai Besar that this revolution started. And this is a very, very strong statement for Tan Sri Noor Omar to make for Selangor BN. So much so that there's a speculation right now that Budiman might be made deputy minister in order to incentivize BN Selangor to actually capture Selangor.
Wow.
And I think that's a huge call.
I think one thing to note is that the BN has not made any net gains from this election. They've only maintained their status quo. So it might be a bit premature to talk about Selangor so early on. But again, if PAS is not part of the coalition, that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
Okay, unfortunately, we've run out of time. So a big thank you to our guest today, P. Gunasekaram, former Kini Biz editor, now independent consultant, trainer and writer. Thanks, Guna. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani for Pressing Matters today on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.